Rick Sanchez here. This is Direct Impact, and this is what we are going to be talking about.
I will ensure America always has the strongest, most lethal fighting force in the world.
Lethal? Wow. Did you catch Kamala Harris at the DNC? She delivered by far one of the most neoconservative, most war hawkish speeches ever. What are we to make of this? I'm Rick Sanchez. Let's do this. We begin today with an arrest that seems to smack, and this is a global thing, seems to smack of government interference of free speech as well as a possible assault on privacy. Pavel Durov has been arrested. He is the founder of the social media site and digital platform Telegram. There he is. You see him. It's used by more than a billion people around the world. This thing's gotten really big. He was arrested over the weekend in France. The charge? Failure to moderate what people say and do on the Telegram platform. Or at least that's, you know, the original announcement of what they were looking at him for. We're going to get into some specifics in a little bit about what that's being defined down to now. Now, here's the article I wanted to show you as well. This is in the French newspaper Le Monde. Just today. And I think this is interesting. Look at the headline. Look, it reads, Telegram affair poses a test for the European Union. And then the subhead says it's rekindling the debate on how to adjust the digital space to align with European regulations. Now, okay, that's fair. That's actually a fair headline and a fair comment. Governments do have the right to try and come up with perhaps some guidelines to make sure that social media and digital platforms aren't used for harm, for example. I get it. That's fair. In fact, France isn't the only country to criticize social media sites for sometimes irresponsible material on their platforms. Russia did the same thing. In fact, Russia actually did this when it went after Telegram. Here's the headline in that one if you want to see it. Russia tried to shut down Telegram. They did so because much of the material on Telegram was very critical of Russia. And in fact, Durov was critical of Russian President Vladimir Putin. So, yeah, I get it. Governments are trying to figure this whole new technology out. How are they going to figure it out? What are they going to do? Can we sit down and maybe come up with a plan or something, right? But Russia didn't arrest this guy. You know what I mean? They didn't arrest him. And now Telegram is used, by the way, by millions of Russians. And it's not just Russians. It's used by millions of people all over the world, obviously. In fact, it's favored by many because when you message on Telegram, it's supposed to be more secure, even supposedly encrypted. So why is France being heavily criticized for this by people all over the world, by the way? Because arresting a CEO for what people may do or say on his platform, or not say, is a lot like arresting the head of a phone company for what people say or talk about during their private conversations on private lines. He can't control that. And here's the double standard. Now, look at this. Look at these pictures I found to share with you. Many social media sites, including Twitter and Facebook, have also come under similar scrutiny, as we discussed. But look how different the CEO of Facebook was treated. He was wined and dined when he went to France, sat down and got to hang out with French President Macron, who made sure they had nice pictures of the two of them. This is a sharp contrast, isn't it? Quite a double standard when you think about it in comparison to the CEO of Telegram. He wasn't wined and dined. I mean, he's been thrown in jail. And that's kind of where we are right now with this story. Manila, let me bring you into this. Thoughts over the top as you look at this story develop.
Well, we should point out that according to the officials at Telegram, they say that Pavel Durov is a French dual citizen Emirati citizenship, so a citizen of the UAE where he now resides. So we'd probably have to further explore whether or not that had any impact as to why they were arresting him, or if this is just on the broader scope of things, a way to punish him for not cooperating with French or European Union EU laws regarding censorship, as we've seen in the UK, and how they're shutting things down there. And France, for example, does not like Rumble, the video platform, because also they are not censoring. So there's a lot of questions here regarding where France and their beliefs in freedom of expression and freedom of speech actually lie in 2024, when conveniently, as you just pointed out and showed, Mark Zuckerberg, who runs Facebook and Instagram, are notoriously places where you find a lot of child pornography and even human trafficking taking place.
And well, and by the way, you find it everywhere. I mean, this is the problem. Social media is not, you know, this newscast where we're very careful and try to be ethical and have certain standards that we have to uphold. Social media is just a big party where everybody can go in and say whatever the hell they want. So, I mean, that's what it is. Let's not fool ourselves. So to say that, oh, there was some stuff that was bad on Facebook, there was some stuff that was bad on Telegram, there was some stuff that was bad on Twitter, duh, yes, and it's gonna be there, and there's no way you can get rid of it. The question is, who do you hold responsible for it? Maybe you need to just shut it down then, but you can't arrest one guy and let the other guy say, ah, no problem, right? I mean, that's kind of what's going on here. Yeah.
That's exactly it. Now, I'm no expert in French law, but obviously, like here in the U.S., Section 230 is a major problem for tech companies as well as those on Capitol Hill, because sometimes it's applicable and they want to use, you know, these big tech companies, these social media companies, and call them, you know, a publisher. When it's convenient, they just allow them to be a platform and they want them to not moderate. Other times they want them to moderate. But the key fact here, Rick, is that on both sides of the Atlantic, what they want, they being the powers in both France and here in Washington, is that they want access. The powers that be want backdoor access, and Pavel Durov is not playing ball.
Well, no, because again, there would be like saying, hey, by the way, Miss Manila or Mr. Rick, anytime you get on your phone, we're giving access to the CIA or whoever, so they can listen to your call. Just want to let you know. I mean, I would never get on my phone. Right. I mean, why would it? Or the police or the mafia, whoever. All right, listen, second story. Ready? Democrats finally finished their convention. All things considered, the Broadway production went swimmingly well. Well, no real news came out of it. It was extremely entertaining. And it's likely going to boost their lead over Mr. Trump even more so. But many are still talking about Kamala Harris's saber-rattling, neocon-ish speech and wondering, when did the Democrats become so hawkish, so bloodthirsty and war-hungry sounding? Hear it.
As Commander-in-Chief, I will ensure America always has the strongest, most lethal fighting force in the world.
Lethal fighting force in the world. We're gonna be the biggest, the baddest, the best. We're gonna kill you. We're gonna kill everybody. Like, what? Look, I'm old enough to tell you that it used to be the Democrats who were, at least in terms of what they presented in a speech like this in the past, they were the party of peace. We're gonna make sure there's peace in the world. We're gonna get rid of the wars. Republicans and their media partners at Fox News, for example, they were the war party. They're the ones who pushed through the Iraq War, not the Democrats, right? They pushed it right down Americans' throats. But now, it's like the roles have completely reversed. I mean, I watched it happen when I covered the Iraq War, when I worked at NBC. It's kind of fascinating to watch this woman, and I know there's reasons for it, what they're trying to do and position themselves a certain way, but Manila, what did you think of the Vice President Harris sounding like a cross between, oh, I don't know, John Wayne and John Bolton?
Like John Bolton shaved and put a wig on? No, I mean, I really feel like what we heard in that 40-minute speech that she gave was like the DNC summoned the spirit of John McCain and talked about war, like you said, bloodthirsty, let's kill them all. I mean, that was the tone of all of this. And because it seems increasingly that the parties here in the U.S. have seemed to have switched priorities and goals and their platforms, you've seen a migration of the people that are neocons, even though the name is, you know, short for neoconservative.
Yeah.
The neocon party is basically the Never Trump party, and they have migrated over to the DNC. We saw Adam Kinzinger, the former congressman, go speak. He was given a primetime slot at the DNC convention.
You're so right. Yeah.
To applaud Kamala Harris for, you know, being this or that, the other thing, and promoting their values. And what are their values? Traditional
more wars.
Conservatives. What are the traditional? More wars.
More wars.
The John McCains of the 2000s.
Yeah. Ukraine, and then China, and then Iran, and then Gaza, and then it's like it goes on forever, and you're wondering, wow, you guys used to be different. All right, let's talk Bobby Kennedy. Robert F. Kennedy Jr., the son of the man who would have been president of the United States if not assassinated, and the nephew of JFK, who was also assassinated, says his reputation has been assassinated by our two political systems, our two-party systems, most of all by the Democratic Party and as well the media, who literally chose to ignore him and ridicule him even when he had 20% of the vote.
The DNC-aligned mainstream media networks maintain a near-perfect embargo on interviews with me. During his 10-month presidential campaign in 1992, Ross Perot gave 34 interviews on mainstream networks. In contrast, during the 16 months since I declared, ABC, NBC, CBS, MSNBC, and CNN combined gave only 2 live interviews from me.
Isn't that amazing? The other guy got 20. He barely got 2. Kennedy has decided to quit his campaign, though he will not. He's still going to remain on the ballot in most states, by the way, which means it's kind of a quasi-quit. And he's throwing his support to Donald Trump. Trump, for his part, took the opportunity to announce an investigation, a task force that's going to look into what Americans have always wanted to know. Who was really behind the killing of John F. Kennedy?
And they will be tasked with releasing all of the remaining documents pertaining to the assassination of President John F. Kennedy.
This is amazing the way this developed this weekend. First, RFK Jr. says, I'm out. Then he announces he's going to go with Trump. Then Trump announces among the many things he's going to do is he's going to create this task force to find out who killed his father and his uncle. Fascinating the way this all played out, Manila. What were your thoughts?
Yeah, real quick, Rick, let's unpack this quasi-quitting, as you put it. He's quasi-quitting the campaign only in the states that are considered up for grabs, states like Nevada or North Carolina that are now considered swing states. He's taking his name off of those ballots in hopes that the voters that he had in those states will then migrate over to the Trump camp with his endorsement. He's hoping to be a spoiler only to the Democratic Party. I would say, obviously, a little bit as vengeance for the way they treated him so poorly when he's been a lifelong Democrat and championed, you know, the environmental causes and health insurance and all of that stuff for decades. And when it came time for him to throw his hat in the ring, they stabbed him in the back. So in the 11th hour, that's what he's doing back to them in those purplish states. So he is still remaining on the ballots on the other ardently blue and ardently red states, because he still needs to secure, for an independent party in 2028, he needs to secure 5% of the voting block in order to get federal funding for the next 2028 cycle, whoever that may be, as an independent. So he's laying the groundwork as well. So I think this is going to be a great move to shake things up right after the DNC ended.
Point well made. Thanks for sharing that with us. That's fascinating. Yeah, and it's not just that they ignored him. I mean, they did everything possible to only focus on every negative thing that's ever happened in his life. And the guy ain't perfect, trust me. By the way, neither am I, neither is anybody else, but they really smeared it on things like that he found a bear once and left it in a park. Who cares? But it is what it is, and it's where we're going. Thanks, Manila. Great conversation. When we come back, we're going to drill down on France, the arrest of Pavel Durov, and what this really means. We're going to be joined by Elijah Manier. He is live in France. There he is. He's a veteran war correspondent, a journalist. He knows a lot about this story and is going to share some details with us. We're so glad he's there. We'll be right back. So my producer just came and handed me the list of the charges being announced by France against the founder of Telegram. And for the most part, I can take you through it. But one key word that is basically the running line through all of it is complicity. Complicity. In other words, they're saying that he's complicit for anything bad that was said or done on his platform. Which, to my mind, and maybe I'm wrong, we're going to bring in a guest to talk about this now, is like saying the CEO of a phone company is complicit for anything that anybody talks about or plans on the phone or any other kind of communication device, and any company that owns a communication device. So this gets into some really tricky area. There's a couple of other things. Let me bring in Elijah Manye. He's a veteran war correspondent and a journalist. He joins us now live from France. I'm looking at this. I'm sure you've probably looked at it as well, Elijah. What's your take on what you're seeing for the official reason for yanking this man off a plane and throwing him in jail and telling him he might have to be there for 20 years?
Well, first of all, it's important to highlight that he was granted the French nationality 3 years ago by the foreign ministry for his services to improve and contribute to influence in his action, the influence of France and the prosperity of the international economic relations. And 3 years later, he was thrown in jail. So if you look at the list in your hands, there are 12 charges.
Yep.
The most important one and the most significant reason why he was arrested is the second one, because he has refused to communicate at the request of the local authority, which in this case are the intelligence services, mm-hmm. the information document necessary for carrying out operating interception allowed by law. Mm. So all the other accusations are really insignificant, even if they look very sexy. They talk about narcotic, pornography, all the complicity of all the rest are insignificant.
But again, let's just stop on that real quick, because you say it's insignificant, and people listening at home may not understand what you mean by insignificant. What they're saying is not that he had anything to do with pornography or sex or drug sales or any of that stuff, but that people using his platform may have used it to do those things, and they're going to hold him responsible for that. There's a far cry between charging me for selling drugs and saying that I happen to live in a block where people sold drugs, right?
Yes, I absolutely agree with you. And all this complicity aimed to one objective, to twist his arm to allow the intelligence services to be able to monitor everyone on Telegram. And this is something that Durov showed resistance for every single authority that put pressure on him to monitor, control, and know every single person using Telegram whenever they want to know the origin, the place of transmission, his personal data, etc. So if you showed a picture of Facebook CEO sitting
Zucker.
With... then Meta with Emmanuel Macron. In fact, if you look at what Facebook and YouTube and all the others, they accept to cancel and delete tens of thousands of accounts to the request of various governments. But Telegram accepted only to delete 1,300 and nothing more, because he considers anything that is on Telegram is private. It is owned by the individual. It is not him who is responsible. But any material that is deleted, that is stolen, then he deleted it.
Let me ask you a question, because I'm tussling with this myself, okay? I want to be fair. I'm a journalist, and I've always been trained, and when I went to the University of Minnesota to study journalism, and my professors ingrained in me what are my responsibilities as a journalist, what my ethics are as a journalist about sourcing, we have specific shield laws in the United States which tell us we are not allowed to give the government our sources. If I talk to you in private and you tell me, Rick, I don't want people to know you talk to me, I have to protect you. That's my duty as a journalist. Now, what these guys in Facebook and Telegram and all these other places do, they're not journalists. So here's the question that I'm always tussling with, and I'm wondering how you feel about this and how people in Europe feel about this. Should the standards that I have to uphold as a journalist, which I uphold to, and I'm very disciplined about them, should those same standards be used on these people who own Facebook and Twitter and all these other social media sites? What do you think?
I think you're talking about values and principles that we've lost in Europe. That is the key. And it all started not with the CEO of Telegram. It started several months ago when Ursula von der Leyen, the president of the Commission, came out and said, we have to control anything on social media to make sure that you do not, as a citizen of Europe, receive misinformation or disinformation. In another word, they are erosing the democratic value of Europe that once was a pillar of the civil liberties and free expression, and it is now reaching a very alarming trend of authoritarian-style regulation clocked under the guise of security and regulatory compliance.
Because when you say things like what you just said, it becomes, in many ways, a matter of opinion. In other words, one man's threat is another man's truth. So, you know, as long as they say good things about Macron, then that's a good social media site. But the moment they criticize France and perhaps praise China or Iran, that's a bad social media site, and those people need to be called to account. That's the problem, right?
Yes, it is what they tell us that is supposed to need to combat harmful content on online platform is in fact a convenient pretext to expanding state control over digital communication. And they use Digital Services Act rather than being a safeguard against extremism or harmful material as a pervasive censorship to block people from saying the truth or state their mind. So there is a big difference between a legitimate free of expression that is allowed by the law and is part of our constitution and the control of who is going behind the control, who's telling us what is right or wrong, what is his authority and how he is selective about what we can say, what we cannot say.
I would think, and you know, you're an expert on French culture much more than I am. I can tell you about the Hispanic world, not the French world, but I would think that this will cause at least a discussion in France. I read that article that I found this morning in Le Monde. I thought it was generally fair. At least they're trying to figure it out. Do you sense that there will be pushback to Macron doing this in European and more specifically French society?
Well, I think you still have an ideal opinion of Europe, which is no longer the case. Now we talk about, in Europe, there is a lot of talk about radicalization, about terrorism, criminal activity, and hateful social media expression. And all that is to justify the restriction and exaggerating as a tool to legitimize increasing state intervention into the private communication that people have. Unfortunately, we have become a state-ruled system.
Final question. How much do you think this arrest has to do with the fact that he's Russian?
I don't think this is important. I think what is important is to make sure that any consumer or any user on social media has any way of communication that needs to be controlled by the state or removed completely. The fact that he is Russian, it contributes perhaps to his accusation. This is where they're going to highlight the fact that he's Russian if he refuses to collaborate. And I think that will go down well in the mind of people who are ignorant about the reality behind it and who blindly stand behind their government without questioning their destructive act in the war between Ukraine and NATO, against Russia.
This is fascinating. You know, and once again, it's probably a story that we should be discussing. It's an important story. It's one we should talk about, and it's the kind of story that we talk about on this show. Sadly, I can almost guarantee you this story will barely get a mention anywhere in Western media. Forget about CNN, forget about NBC, forget about ABC, et cetera. They will generally ignore it. And if they cover it, it will be colored, and it will probably be what we call in this business a 30-second voiceover. So there you have it. Just thought I'd tell you the difference about what part of the world learns and the other part doesn't get to learn. Elijah Manier, always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for joining us and bringing us up to date on this fascinating story.
Thank you for inviting me.
That's our show. Remember to always be looking outside, as we like to say around here, your own box, because truths don't live in your particular box. Truths are everywhere. I'm Rick Sanchez. Thanks so much for being with us. We'll see you next time.